Trust me, Kristen Lemons will sing soon on that cut from her new CD, You, Me, and All of the Above. Elaine Chaplin-Galesko and I go way back, don't we? How far back do we go?
I can't even remember it. I mean, it is a long, long time.
Well, that's not because you have Alzheimer's or something. You just can't. It's been a long, long time. You had a really interesting career before you started to devote yourself to writing, didn't you?
I did. It's just been a great ride all the way. I started out with Channel 20, developing and founding it.
Yeah.
In Chicago, our second PBS affiliate. And I was a professor at Wright College.
Right.
Loved both with great passion.
When you started to write, Elaine, what was a compelling factor? I'm always interested in that with writers. Is it, I thought I had stories to tell. I thought someone would be interested in my story. What was it that first got you doing that? Or was it just, let me ask you another, was it just an interesting way to be more introspective than you can be? If you have to put it down on paper, you've got to really work at being introspective.
It is so interesting that you ask it that way, because that would have been the answer when I was younger. And I wrote for myself, and it was very introspective, and just for me.
Yeah.
And so after I was teaching at Wright and I decided finally to retire, Richard said to me, have a plan.
Richard being the handsome husband who is sitting in the studio with
me. Indeed.
Her. Yes.
Indeed. Always with me. My handsome husband. He said, have a plan. If you retire without a plan, you're not going to be happy.
Interesting.
He said, what would you like to do? I said, you know, I've only written for myself. I think I'd like to try to do it professionally.
That's a great thing, because that is a big, big leap. Because you do it with the understanding that other people you don't know, will be reading about your life. That's especially true in her most recent book, My Gift of Now, a collection of short memoirs. You write in here, Elaine, memoir is a natural fit for you. How do you define memoir?
When I started writing, it was about legacy, about memories, about life, and that combination. And that, in the first person, turned out to be memoir. And I had stories to tell from my perspective. They were stories honoring those I've lost and the lives that they have lived. And then the stories, some very funny stories in my life. And
oh, no question.
Thought-provoking stories, and they were about my life.
Let me read you an example, ladies and gentlemen. And they are all quite short. I can't imagine. There are none in here more than 500-600 words, are they? This one's titled Her First Grandchild, and Elaine writes, she is one of the great loves of my life. I lost her in a plane crash February 12, 1963. The memory of my maternal grandfather, Fanny Libideau, inspires me every day of my life. I was my grandma's first grandchild. She had a huge influence on you.
Huge.
I get that sense out of three pages, and there are other mentions in here.
Huge, Rick. I didn't need a lot of words to describe what I felt.
Yeah.
I tried to do it really as I felt it and without worrying about that.
Yeah.
My grandmother was one of the great loves of my life. There's no question about it. Being a first grandchild, as some of our listeners may
be. Oh, I'm sure they can relate to that. Yeah.
Is a very special experience. And we had a rapport, and my grandma gave me unconditional love. There's nothing like a grandparent's love. Never judgmental, always there for you.
But the other interesting thing, and it's kind of not a leitmotif of the book, Elaine, that you lost her in a plane crash, which is no way to lose anybody, because there is no goodbye.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
How do you deal with that?
That's a good question, because time somehow gives you a buffer, and yet I can touch that moment, if I allow myself, immediately, as though it was yesterday. For my my family, my mother, it was her mother, my sisters, all of us. It was surreal. It was something that couldn't be. It was the time of the planes being hijacked to Cuba in 63. And that's what we thought happened, and that's what we had hoped happened, but it wasn't what happened.
One of the you learn in this book, any of you who read it, and again, it is the name of the book is My Gift of Now, a collection of short memoirs, which is available. Just Google it, and you'll find it. There's a real honesty in this book that is palpable. Is it difficult or was it easy? Because you really are very, very honest in this book about the way you feel and the way you felt.
That is just how I felt, and I wrote it as I felt it. Mm. And I always hope that in these stories, those people who have gone through loss, and everyone has on some level, with some story, will get something out of this, knowing they're not alone, and that one does survive it, as agonizingly as it may be.
Well, another thing, you have a very direct style. When you say, well, these are all short, I think they're short on purpose, because you want to be direct. There's no embellishment to this. You're not talking about, you know, the kind of clothes your grandmother always wore, the family time you went to the zoo or something. They're very, very direct. Is that is your style?
That is my style. Yeah. That is my style, yes. I think trying to recreate the feelings and the emotions about this person, and I just do it as pointedly as I can and concisely as I can.
Did you cry writing any of these?
Yes. Yes, and I have cried reading them. And it is the strangest thing. I walked into our study about, 6 months ago, and Richard was on the phone with some cousins reading some of these stories to them. And he caught me off guard. I didn't expect it. And I sat down listening, and it was as though it was someone else's stories. I mean, I was going, oh, my God, is that? Oh, my God. Yeah. How
but
interesting.
Also, he puts him up for the award of World's Greatest Husband, too, doing something like that.
Always.
So not to get too technical, because I want to talk about some of the other pieces in here. How many pieces are in this book? I didn't count them.
We've got about 48.
Oh, that's fabulous. And not some are just barely a page. Do you work the stories? I can't imagine these come out dead cold on your typewriter or computer. You must do some serious rewriting and crafting, because they are like little statues of words.
Actually, this is how they come out.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding. I'm telling you the truth. I sit down at that computer when it hits me, and out it comes, just like that. Then I will reread and edit, but it is in that form.
Wow.
Yes, yes.
Well, that's something of a genius, Richard. She's something of a genius. When you decided to put this book together, you couldn't possibly have said, well, I'm going to do 40-some essays. You just wrote until you felt as if you had had your say now.
Actually, what happened was about 8 years ago, I started writing. And I don't know how I remembered all these stories in my life, but I did. They were coming out of my pores. I just kept writing. And I decided to submit to anthologies, because I thought this way I'd get a varied audience. I'd get more readers, and the editors and the publishers would market their books.
Sure.
So I'm in over 31 anthologies, and I developed a readership on some level. And then the readers asked me, this is great that you're in anthologies, but we will never this way read all of your stories. Would you please put them in one collection?
That's fantastic. That's the way, frankly, it should happen. I'm talking with an old pal and a terribly talented writer, Eileen Chaplik-Alesko, her husband Richard, sitting in here, and we will be back after a couple commercials to pay the bills. That's the voice of Kristen Lems from her new CD, You, Me, and All of the Above. She'll be performing at the CD release party at the Old Town School on August 16th. Go to kristinlems.com. That's KristinLems.com. And go to Amazon.com to get a copy of My Gift of Now by Aline Chaplik-Lesko. It is a very honest, you can flip through this book and find yourself anywhere and enjoy a couple pages of her writing. The Needle in the Haystack is one of my favorite essays in the book. What's that about?
The Needle in the Haystack is...
He's sitting here. The Needle is sitting here.
He's sitting here. That's right. The story of how Richard and I met. Because I met Richard when I was 1 month exactly 42 years old. And
some people, when they're 42 years old, think, well, maybe this will never happen.
I'll tell you, I was so enjoying my life, it almost didn't matter. Being in love was great. Marriage was not first on my list at all. And I went with my girlfriend, Sandy. We started going to a disco every Sunday night that had people our age.
Yeah.
And one Sunday night, she was out of town, and I decided, I think I'll go myself. And I went, and across a room, all of a sudden, I saw this face, and it was Richard Alesco. And I got off the stage. I had been dancing, and he was making eye contact with me.
And here we are sitting in the after-hours studio.
With Rick Kogan. Well, I mean, it doesn't get any better than this.
Stop it.
And so we met. Richard is a classical music baby. Sure. And this was disco. He had never been there, but he stayed with me, and we danced, and we closed the place.
Any guy willing to do disco who didn't do it before is the guy you should marry.
Let me tell you.
There's another very charming little essay in here, Backstage. You met someone really famous. How'd that happen?
Yes, that was my family would go to Florida. And as soon as I was old enough, I would go myself to New York. And I fell in love with New York, and I would go to the theater, and I never would stand and wait for autographs. But this one night, I saw people going through the backstage door, and I followed, and it was a show Katharine Hepburn had just been in, Coco Chanel's Life.
Yeah, not a great show.
Not a great show at all. But we went through the theater, and I was waiting for someone to turn around and say,
get
who are you? But they did not.
Yeah.
And we went into the main area of the theater and into the lobby, and it was set up banquet style. Hepburn had just won the Oscar, and there she was. And I walked up to her, and I tapped her on the shoulder, and she turned around with these blazing blue eyes and exquisite high cheekbones, and I said, I came in from Chicago to see you, and I wish I had known you as a friend. And she said, you may have been very disappointed. I said, I don't think so. She said, enjoy yourself. She turned around, and I did.
And that one is barely a page in this book. Yes. Barely a page. Okay, let's move to my next one. And I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, the book is at once, it's a loving tribute to some of the people Aline has known in her life. It's a loving treatment to the guy sitting in the studio with her. It's little stories like the Katharine Hepburn stories, but then there's stories I think that are just, it's hooked on an event, but the story, one of the stories that moved me the most, and again, it's barely a page long, is called The Shadow.
Yes, that was an amazing experience, Rick. I was driving, and I was just sitting on Diversey in Chicago. In traffic, and you know how suddenly you just have a sense of something about to happen.
Right.
And my peripheral vision, I realized there was someone running. And suddenly she was at my door, my passenger side of the car, pounding on my door. And I looked at her, and instead of feeling fear, I realized I just knew this woman was in desperate trouble.
Yeah.
And I unlocked my door. And in she came and said, please drive. And her husband had beat her and was coming after her, and I was scared to death he was going to come after both of us.
Of course.
But we did get away, and I brought her to her mother's, and she was an abused woman, a young woman, and it was just an amazing experience.
But in that, and you also in that short essay, you appreciate the courage it took for her to do that, don't you?
I did. She said she knew he'd kill her this time, and she had the courage to run and run into a stranger's car. I mean, she didn't know who I was either.
Sure.
And I don't know whatever happened, but I hope she made it. I pray she made it.
To show you, ladies and gentlemen, the varied and eclectic nature of the book. Then there's another story in here called Lucy. What's Lucy up to in this, Elaine?
Lucy's up to the same thing. It's just an extension of the single life. Lucy is looking for the right person in her life, but it's someone who is using social media now to try to find the right man. And a lot of funny experiences. That's why I called her Lucy after Lucille Ball.
Yeah, well, you talk to her almost every day.
I talk to her almost every day.
This is almost a dear, dear friend of yours. How's she doing on that in that strange world?
She is seeking. She is still seeking. She's a wonderful lady, but this is not an easy thing to do.
No, no. I know a number of people who do it. Thank God you didn't have to do it. Then I want to talk to you about your future as a writer, but I must mention and maybe read from something that's close to my heart, but this essay is called Cardboard People. And you write, what is most frightening to me is that we are becoming complacent with images, those images. They're there, and we are familiar with them. They are annoyances in our way as we navigate our afternoon chores or our evening walk. And I'll skip a paragraph. They are anonymous, and we wish to keep them that way. We cannot pollute our realities with theirs. Their existence reminds us of the frailty of our own good luck in our eyes. They are made only of cardboard cups and walks. This all started when you and Richard were someplace, and you wound up with a cup, right?
Yes. Yes, driving just again in the Chicago Boulevard, on the Chicago Boulevards, I saw the viaducts made out of cardboard, and these were the homeless of our city
living underneath of the viaducts.
Living underneath them, and I had an experience where Richard had a Starbucks and he gave me the cup as I went to Walgreens to throw it out. And walking toward Walgreens carrying the cup, a man approached me and put money in my cup.
And then you looked at him in some way that compelled him to look for more money.
The nonverbal said to him, how about a little more? Instead, I was actually saying, I don't believe you just did that. And he put his hand in his pocket and gave me more money. And so I started laughing and he was insulted.
Yeah.
And I explained I was merely throwing out the cup. But the nonverbal of the cup said it all to him. I mean, we're all conditioned. Either we give or we look away as though we don't see them.
One of the things, you're so right. That essay really moved me because we tend, I think, to just look right through these people as if, literally, as if they did not even exist.
That's right, as though they're not there.
Without realizing that the line between these people and us, I think that's what your essay is saying, is so thin.
That's right.
So thin.
That's right.
Now, this book, you're going to have a special thing in December at Women and Children First, but the book is doing well. That makes you happy. What's next in the writing life of Elaine Chaplick Alesco?
Well, one reader recently wrote to me and said, I so enjoyed it, but I need more stories.
Well, but there's no doubt that you have more stories.
I do. So I'm sure that I will be doing more. The book right now is about a month old, so it's still my infant.
So your baby. You're watching
my
the
baby.
Book fly.
That's right. I'm watching it fly. Amazon has run out, and they reordered. And
right. And you can go in to go to the bookstall or Women and Children First and most of what's left of the independent bookstore scene here and get your book. You're pleased with the response because it's an honest book and you're honest in it and strangers are reading it.
You know, Rick, I'm a bit overwhelmed by the response. I was hoping people would like it, but it's really touching people. And they're saying to me that they can't put it down. I didn't expect those words.
Yeah.
They can't put it down. And that's what they're telling me. So I'm very thrilled. And I'm...
Well, one of the other great things about a book of 48, I think you said, essays, is... Hey, if you don't like this one, if it doesn't hit your heart or it has nothing to do with your life, the next one does. This is really something. It's not my place, certainly, to be proud of you, but I am proud of you. Writing is a hard thing, and you seem to enjoy it tremendously.
I do.
Most of the writers I'm in here are tortured, you know, tortured souls. And the book, again, is my gift of now. It was really born of readers from anthologies sort of telling Eileen that she had to do this book, and that's a great motivator.
Yes,
that's a great motivator.
I'm very
now
grateful.
You're hearing great things, and Richard is reading it over to the phone to his relatives, and it's a whole to do.
Richard's going to go to senior centers and read this book to the seniors.
That's a great idea.
That. Yeah,
make sure you go to the North Shore Senior Center. That's right. One of the best out there.
I did it there.
Did you?
Yeah, you're known there and loved there. We spoke about you.
Well, that's because I played 10 minutes of Mike Royko talking about softball. And people were like, holy cow, I thought he was dead. I said, well, he is dead. But I have this amazing tape. Yeah, they're nice people up there, really nice. It is great to see both of you. Congratulations on the book. And
thank you, Rick.
And let's see more.
Thank you for all your support.
In the next book, I want to see an essay about being on this show and mentioning Aubrey and Dan and what a thrill it was.
There you go.
You're a doctor.